contemplating the ending, the fading of our second full day practicing together. Pausing. To recollect what has been set in motion, what has been created, the celebration of stopping this evening, the welcoming of the Shabbat, was so beautiful. Extraordinary, the beauty that can manifest in simplicity. Human voice, honoring, celebrating, resonating with each other, listening to each other, so that there's beautiful blending, harmony. Sense of appreciating. The simple. It can be so full. I felt very full. Filled. Maybe one can get a sense of the word we chant in the morning, Bhagawa, filled with blessings, when one appreciates, celebrates. Notice there's a fullness. So the brim flows over. On the other hand, we can have all sorts of things. We can be all powerful, have possessions, be in a beautiful place. And we can also be miserable. And the mind is sour. And nothing's right. Nothing's enough. In a sense, what we've been practicing the first few days is about learning to appreciate the blessing of simplicity. Let's not let it get too complicated. So the Buddha had an extraordinary capacity for understanding the different factors which allow us to fully be somewhere, fully be in a moment, appreciatively. Sometimes if we worry too much about the process, the technique, the methods, we can forget the essence. In essence, we've been practicing learning to, as fully as we can, be with a moment. Be with sitting as a human being that's sensitive, that can hear, that feels, that has thought processes, intentions that fire off in this direction. The memory or projection about, am I getting close? 2 days are gone. Has my samadhi meter gone up? as it deteriorates. Or an intention can fire off recollecting the past. Maybe remember another retreat. Maybe start comparing. Why is it so crowded? Or the teachings were more lucid. Or I was very peaceful. Intentions firing into trying to get somewhere, intentions battling with the mind. We have this human condition, and the Buddha is encouraging us to learn to allow that intention, what we've been calling vitakka vichara, that's a complicated way of saying, encouraging our attention to remind us to be here. If we're walking, to be with walking. Can we appreciate what it is to walk? To feel our feet on the earth. To notice the wind, or the heat, or the cold. To notice the movement. To appreciate that when we're sitting, to be able to sit, appreciate what it means to have a body, to appreciate. Sometimes it's useful to recollect the importance the Buddha gave to the breathing. That was the method that the Buddha himself used on the night of his enlightenment. Of being with the in and the out breath. Sometimes as meditators we can see the breath as this thing we have to turn into some ecstatic state. And we forget to reflect on the blessing. The blessing of breath. It's something that is freely offered. As a human being, it's useful to remember there's something in this universe that is offering us to breathe in as much as we want. There's not breath meters. Have to kabook to make sure how much you're breathing of our country air. It's free. Yes, perhaps we're polluting it as human beings. Maybe we're not looking after our air as well as we should. Certainly we're not. But in a place like this, we're fortunate to be able to breathe in. Something from outside us, which is freely offered, blesses us. We need more, we can take a deeper breath. We need less, we can take a shallow breath. No one's forcing us to breathe. And that this universe allows us to exhale, to remember that it's okay to relax. It's okay to, like a sigh, is that sign of the human being when we're carrying too much. It's the natural letting go mechanism. And as we breathe out, we breathe out what the body doesn't need. It's the plant kingdom we use. It's also to remember that the breathing in and breathing out is reminding us that we're in a web, and that an aspect of this web is gentle. It offers us breath. It allows us to breathe, to let go, in back into it. The Buddha taught that when we more fully allow ourselves to be with something in its simplicity, we start to notice more magic, the mystery. When we're not fully here, our reality tends to be defined by the concepts, and labels that we have. That's how the world gets very dry and very... I know you, know your name. Another day. Another meditation. Another sitting. Another walking. Because, you know, walking, it can make us think that we know it. It's a kind of knowing. A power when we have a label, but it makes us feel like we know things. Oh, there they are. They're struggling, I can tell. That one doesn't know how to meditate. Mm-hmm. And we're busy pegging everything. Also, guess what? We get pegged ourselves, too. So we're pegging everything. And then when we're not fully there, we don't really recognize how ephemeral those so-called knowing thoughts are. They're just bubbles. It's like a little bubble trying to proclaim the truth of the universe. The bubble that will pop. This is true, pop. I really mean it, pop. But when we don't have samadhi, then we're just guided by these opinions. But when we pause and allow ourselves to cultivate a quality of attentiveness, being with steps, being with body, being with eating, being with listening, the framework of the noble silence is very helpful because it encourages us not to be too distracted by our conversation. It encourages us to listen more, to give ourselves permission to, in a sense, I don't know the holiday. Is today the holiday of the mass? Okay, yes. Yesterday?
Today.
It's today. I know something about that it was... someone told me today that there was it Esther was fasting, and then that through being fast and then getting the king to change his mind about the killing the Jewish people. Something about masks, I don't know. But I was thinking being on a meditation retreat is like wearing a mask. We have permission. To not be a dazzling personality. We have permission to go through all these different moods because they're meditating. We have permission to do things that otherwise people might think you're do something with you. They saw you out there walking, coming back and forth. Because all of us are giving ourselves permission. Using this framework, which is just guides the body, guides the action, which allows inside, allows this highlighting of the inner world. And to cultivate behind this, from the outside, apparently not very exciting activity. I mean, day one. Well, they were walking, and then they were sitting, and they were eating. It was a talk. Day two, well, they were walking, and they were sitting. And from the outside, not so, but from the inside, it's like that chanting this evening. the ceremony this evening. So beautiful. From the inside, I don't know how you were, but my heart was in a place where I was just savoring something. And when we're jaded, when we're so busy just consuming, so busy just going from thing to thing, skimming over the surface, we don't really appreciate. This kind of setting, we're encouraging ourselves with moments of being there to appreciate seeing and hearing and walking and breathing and whatever that we're doing, resting. And even to appreciate the different moods that we have. They tend to get highlighted. The struggle. We've been talking about the cultivation of meditative states of ease. But if you haven't been having meditative states of ease, can we at least fully listen to what it is to be with that state? Get a sense for that. There's a relationship the Buddha taught, a relationship between the capacity to be at ease and fully here. Relationship between that and struggle. Being caught up and somehow obstructed from being able to enjoy being here. In the Buddha's words, the natural state of the heart is samadhi. So it's a natural capacity that we have, is to be gathered where we are. We lose track of this luminosity and gathered potential of the heart when we're confused. And I'll just touch on them this evening, but many of you have classically, I'm sure, heard before about hindrances, those things we touched on in the discussion this evening, those things which hinder. If we find ourselves struggling with the meditation, struggling with the breath, struggling with the walking, struggling with being here, undoubtedly or usually it means that one of these other forces is at play and we're not recognizing. We don't need to be humiliated by this. We don't need to be ashamed of this. It's just an opportunity to get to know those in us. Sometimes we're just plain trying too hard. We're trying to get somewhere. That's a form of desire, a wanting. We have an idea in the mind. We read about, what was that Kamehameha said? There's not one. Bachman's apprentice or something, not one part of the body that is drenched, suffused, permeated with bliss, with rapture. Not happening here. And so then we're meditating and leaning to get there. And we're straining, maybe pushing too hard. And then as we're pushing for every part of the body that's drenched, we run into a part of the body that's not drenched with bliss, that's drenched with racking pain, pulsing pain, burning pain. And we start fighting. Wanting something and not wanting something. These are two of the classics of important ones. The idea that it's not really here, it's around the corner, it's over there. This kind of leaning that doesn't let us settle. Or it would be here if it wasn't for. And then we start battling, start pressing away. That straining and that pressing away is not conducive to this this energy that the Buddha is talking about. We've talked about vitakka vichara. We've talked about bringing the mind here, then letting the heart pick up or hold the body sitting and breathing or walking or whatever we happen to be doing. Let's emphasize again this third quality that's very helpful, titti, which the Buddha described as rapture. But remember, when it's fully blossomed, okay, maybe there's goosebumps, maybe there's tears coming out, maybe there's a sense of, I suspect quite a few people felt rapture up in the Shavasana. I felt rapture. That feeling of being filled like that. But the seed of it is something is filled if there's a container, if you have a tiny little cup. If you're leaning to get somewhere, you don't have anything, any space to pour into. Rapture needs a quality of appreciation. Notice how appreciation, when you appreciate something, notice your heart opens and receives. It's like that. Receiving. Holding so that you can be filled. That's why the Buddha was talking about little by little sensitizing, training ourselves to sense the whole body so that we have the capacity to hold this rapture, to hold this energy. We just got some kind of brain, mind brain, it's aiming for, based on some memory, aiming for something, and we're driving and we're pushing. It might be a thrill, I guess, occasionally, but it's not the same. So the seed that blossoms into rapture is learning as we bring the attention here, as we start to explore, learning to hold and cradle, appreciate that energy, even if it's not pleasant. You can still hold it. That touching of the heavy, touching of the unpleasant, quickens it. The nature of awareness is that it lightens things. It quickens the vibration. We're just starting, the whole room, energy of the room starting to lighten up on the second day. My experience is that. Because we're all working hard. We're digesting a lot of the heavy. So we hold these different energies. And if there is a desire to get somewhere else. We recognize that as attention and we breathe into that. We appreciate the energy of that without being deluded by it. We notice that impatience, breathe into it, relax with it. And so sometimes rapture has a physical component, what's being talked about. And so if our energy is low, it's not going to just suddenly shift. So can we even be peaceful when our energy is low? Appreciate that. Hold that. Breathe into that. And the fourth factor, sukha, very important. Sukha means, it's translated as happiness. But it means to be at ease with it. It means relaxing. Again, relaxing allows the energy to flow. Relaxing allows the container to spread a little bit more. Then if we do that, with patient moments of being with the heaviness, patient moments of being with the distraction, patient moments of being with the aversion, they well up and subside, taking it back to the sensations of the body. Then, in time, these willful moments of coming back, start to become, they have their own momentum, as many of you have experienced. They start to carry themselves, and there's a sense of the energy starting to flow. There's a little bit of a sense of the breath becoming lighter, and little by little, the body's becoming lighter. And then it's like the image that our teacher gave. It's like a boat that's in the sand. It's come in from the sea and is in the sand. So it's being beached onto the sand. Part of it's still in the water. And as the tide is lifting, the tide, the water levels raising, tide lifting. The heaviness of the boat's still grounded on the sand, but the tide's lifting. And then just at one point, it just lifted it off the ground and dropped like that. And it lifts it a little off the ground. That lifting, it's a little bit like when kicking, the energy starts to well up. I worked with a lot of illness, a lot of weakness, so sometimes I just have to kind of prop myself up here. Kind of like that. Then just like holding a baby, I just let the awareness hold that tired body, breathe into the tired body, appreciate the tired body. Oh, I wish I wasn't tired. Breathe into that too. Be patient. Then notice when the samadhi, when the gatheredness starts to go, energy starts to well. Because you're not wasting a lot of energy thinking, oh, God, I was gone years ago, keep coming back. And wouldn't it be nice if in 5 years, keep coming back. So that energy, and why does she have so much energy? Keep coming back. She doesn't appreciate what it's like to be tired. Keep coming back. Let that energy well up. And because you're not wasting energy, starts to circulate to the system. And it notices, gets into blocks, okay, those are painful. Relax those. If you have to move, but that's all right. Still, stay there. The energy, it starts, and then you notice, you don't have to tell your posture what to do. The energy lifts your body. It puts the spine into, opens the chest. Wow, it's not because you're being filled. Relaxation is very important. You try too hard, then you don't allow the energy to fill. That, as one gets a taste of that, it's a little bit bubbly. Sometimes it's very exciting. We get so excited about it that then we... This is why I started meditation, because I had a certain facility for it. For that. When I was a university student, I first learned some meditation, and I would do that and get that feeling and get so excited. Lose all mindfulness. I used to pause a little bit, that energy would well up, and then a light would appear. I'd get so excited because I used to think naively, oh, that must be enlightenment. There's a light. And once I was meditating, before I had any teacher or anything, got calm and two lights appeared. Whoa, and I was so excited. I ran up the stairs to celebrate and opened my roommate's stereo with such enthusiasm that I ripped the top off of it. Two lights disappeared very quickly. From this practice, it is the nature, if you have the experience of calming down and of energy welling up, that is that bubbling, that welling, that filling, it is pleasant. But notice the tendency to get so excited about it. We're learning skill with feeling. This is part of the training. And that's why if you just have a little bit of your body involved and you just run up the stairs and rip off the stereo, then relax or let somebody go into the arm. Relax, let that go into the face. Relax, let that go into the hip. Relax, even that painful knee. Noticing in the other parts of the body that are lumpy or compressed, and breathing into that so that your body becomes one that can hold. can hold that. Sukha has a cooler feeling. Pitti is the more space, welling up, widening. That's calmed down by sukha, which is just more ease. Satisfy. At ease, relax. So if you're trying too hard and really running into trouble, it's good. If you're with the breath, just practice with each out-breath, let go. This is like this. Don't try so hard. Can you be content with this? Okay, the feeling is tired. Okay, let's appreciate this. Let's hold this. Let's relax with this. Very helpful. And little by little, allowing that quality of presence to grow. On the other hand, if one's very heavy and very sleepy, then as Tanisha was saying in the questions this evening, then we can balance that by opening the eyes or by encouraging the in-breath, a short in-breath, the burst, just feeling that brightness of the in-breath. Or let your posture be more uncomfortable. Don't keep laying back. Let oneself be a little more uncomfortable. Even have a mudra, even lift your hand up a little. So if you drift off, your hand will go. You know, lift it up like that. Just tuning the instrument. This is about learning to tune. Have we done that simile, the famous simile in this retreat? I can't remember what of tuning the stringed instrument. The Buddha, the main one of the main images for the efforts that we make in our meditative practice. The Buddha described as tuning a stringed instrument. He had a disciple called Sona, who was newly ordained, came from a wealthy family, inspired by the Buddha, saw the awesome deportment of the Buddha, the way he helped people, the peacefulness of the Arahat disciples, and thought, yeah, that'd be nice. Ordained, went forth, and was taught walking meditation, so he was determined. He did walking meditation. Back and forth and back and forth. And I suspect he was struggling because he wasn't getting the enlightenment that he wanted. And then at a certain point he got so exhausted, so frustrated, so that he had the thought, I think this is too hard. He said, you know, I am rich. Why don't I go home, make lots of gifts and make lots of good karma? I can then meditate next lifetime. And so the Buddha overheard his thought and then appeared in front of him and said, Sona, have you been thinking like this? And he said, yes, Lord, I'm struggling. And the Buddha said, well, didn't you, before you became a monk, play the vina, the instrument at the time of the Buddha, some sort of stringed instrument? And he said, yes. And he said, what kind of sound did your instrument make when you tightened it up too much? He said, not a nice sound. Screeches. What sort of sound did it make when it was too loose? Not much of a sound.
Wow.
He said, but what if you tuned it just right? Just right. What kind of sound did it make? It makes a lovely sound. What page does it say just how tight it should be? That's not on a page. That's each of us. Each of us with our health. Each of us with our constitution. Each of us with our what we've come from in our lives. Each of us, every day, is different. We explore tuning. So, yes, techniques are starts, but then the fun happens when you experiment. You experiment more effort and less effort. Meditation should be fun. Yes, it's an effort, but it's, don't be afraid. What if I do that wrong? Wrong? We're learning how to be here. We're just learning how to more be here. So we're getting to know the levers of making effort, softening effort, focusing the attention, and then sometimes drop the attention. When you're just working too hard on the breath, and it's just, well, I quit. I still sit there. I gave that up 5 minutes. And just notice that, you know, guess what? You're still awake. Gee, I'm noticing the breath. I'm not even trying. You know, sometimes we're just trying too hard. Just sometimes let's just quit trying. That's where this out-breath, just let go. Oh, if I let go, but who's going to breathe in? Don't worry. You'll breathe in. Let go. And then the breath comes. And let go again. The breath comes. Notice it's still awake. So explore. Meditation's fun. And when it's not fun, see if you can be interested in that. What's going on here? Usually it's wanting something that you think should be here. It's trying to get rid of something that we think shouldn't be here. Kind of battle. And we can notice that. We can notice how to fix the body. We can breathe with that. So meditative states. Rather than worrying so much which level we're at or which state, our teacher would encourage us to know when it's peaceful. Or to know, be able to say, well, that's a little more peaceful. Or just know when it's not too peaceful. Be able to know this is not peaceful. Okay. And when it's not peaceful, can we at least taste that? Can we accept that on some moment? Can we notice that and get a sense of if we're trying to get something, if we're trying to get rid of something? We're going to talk more and look more in the next few days as we start to use some of this good work we've done in terms of being present. As we start to use some of this to continue enjoying being one moment at a time, but use this to start to investigate, to start vipassana, to start looking into tovana, having insights into the nature of things. Using this quality of steadiness. But if one is getting calm, and appreciate that. Look at this tendency to get really greedy and imagine, like I did for many years, that you just get more calm, more calm, more calm, more calm, more calm, more calm, and want some sort of explosion that then everything is different and we're just in bliss all the time. That's called a wrong view. I had one for quite a long time. And believe me, you can have some very amazing states, but they change. So it's not, you know, giving prizes on who can get the most refined state, but if you're having refined state, just appreciate. And sometimes as we're being with the breath, we're being with the energy, we're being filled, relaxing. Sometimes, as we touched on in the discussion, sometimes signs appear. Don't be worried or don't be overly excited if they happen too. They're natural things that happen to some people. It's just a question of different people's karma. But they're subtle manifestations of the breath. Remember, the breath is a vibratory energy. The Buddha talked about the elements of how we experience form. Not talking about the scientific table of elements that we know in our laboratories, but he's talking about experientially how we experience form in terms of hardness, in terms of vibration, movement, in terms of liquidity, cohesion, in terms of heat and radiation. And the breath energy is a vibratory energy. As we notice the in-breath and the out-breath, sometimes we'll start to notice a vibration, a sensation. That's actually the subtle breath. That's what carries the vitality of the breath to all the cells. The in-breath, the mechanical in-breath, and the mechanical out-breath are rhythmic. They're soothing, but they pause. They're interrupted. The vibration continues. At some point, sometimes if we have that sense of subtle feeling in the body, sometimes we'll then naturally stay with that feeling because it's continuous. We'll still notice the welling, the swelling and contracting of the breath, the ebbing and flowing of the breath, but the mind will steady itself on the tingle, on the vibration, on the subtle sensation. And because it's continuous, the mind can find it and hold it. And we can go to a deeper level of stability. Each of the senses sometimes demonstrates these subtle signs. In hearing, sometimes people hear what they call a ringing or a roaring. What our teacher called the sound of silence. That was one of his main meditation themes. It can be called a manifestation of the breath energy, a manifestation of the cosmic vibration. Sometimes we hear that it has different frequencies. The higher ones, more associated with the upper chakras, the ringing. There's still the breathing, but that can be a sign for stabilizing. Steady. If you do that because it's a higher chakra energy, I encourage you to still keep the body around so that that vibration can bless the body so that it's embodied. It's helpful in terms of its skillfulness for daily life. There's also lower frequencies that are associated with the lower chakras that are like roars, like oh. Sometimes you hear those, you think of jet planes flying over. If you happen to have that happen, then one can keep the body there and notice what happens as one's listening. One can use that as a reference point to leave thought behind and steady oneself. So one goes to a deeper feeling, then sometimes, because it's so continuous, one doesn't have to tell ourself what we're doing so much, so the vitaka vichara might fall away. Because we're right there anyway, we're not telling ourselves. Hearing sometimes happens. Sometimes seeing a light might appear. And again, rather than being so excited, this can be a manifestation of the breath energy. One can focus on it, mix it with the body, refresh the body. Less common is smells and tastes. But if these things happen, it's not a question of getting so excited. It's not a question of worrying if you don't have them. Because it's just... But if that happens, then one can work with that. With the body, that's where sometimes we feel these feelings of like we're expanding, or sometimes someone thinks, there's a mask on my face. I'm feeling like I'm getting heavy. That's the subtle breath energy. Don't panic. That can deepen your concentration. Just stay with that feeling. Keep relaxing with it. Let it melt your bones. Let it go through everything. Then the body starts to become one. We realize that we're not hands and shoulders and organs, and it's a non-dual. It's all connected.